Today's show is sponsored by Squarespace. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code VERBAL to get 10% off your first purchase.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildebrand here, Dan Rubenstein over there. SolidVerbal@gmail.com, as always, is our email address. 408-VERBAL-1. That's 408-837-2251. That, as always, is the reverb line, Dan, and as you might imagine, filled to the brim. Yeah, after a week two that I gotta say, on the surface, did not look to be all that sexy, not a lot of great matchups, but at the end of the day, this happens time and time again. Every college football weekend, there are still a fair amount of wild finishes, a fair amount of stuff to talk about. We're gonna play those in a little bit. Our good friend Taylor from Red Shell Radio put those together for us bright and early. Don't forget, we're also on Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and Facebook and anywhere else I forgot to mention. If there is a social media network out there, Dan Rubenstein, we are on it. Sir, how are you?
I'm good. You mentioned filled to the brim, not unlike the stat lines of Lamar Jackson and Kalen Ballage
for Arizona State. What was that about?
And then that was Friday night, right?
Yeah.
So that was a fun way to start the weekend. So let's see, we have a weekend of teams that continued to distance themselves from subpar competition.
Correct.
We had a weekend of unexpected, underwhelming performances.
Agreed.
And I would argue a little bit of redemption.
Redemption by whom?
Danny Etling, almost completing 50% of his passes and that being good enough to pace LSU away from Jacksonville State.
Yeah.
Ole Miss played a complete game.
Sure.
That is a thing. Notre Dame sort of shook off some ugliness cobwebs from the previous week. Granted, it was just Nevada.
Sure.
I felt like there were enough stories. I mean, Oregon's defense seemed to get better over the course of a game, and Dakota Prukop looked more comfortable in the Oregon offense.
You still seem very uncomfortable about talking about Oregon's defense.
Yeah. It's we're getting into a talking to your kids part of Oregon hasn't lost, but their defense looks like that. Part of Oregon's schedule and plan. A little bit of redemption for Arkansas, winning not one, but two September games.
Yeah, how about it?
I would say that's a little bit of redemption. Iowa not doing anything stupid in a game that they should have won easily and did win easily. So I would say it was, I mean, Central Michigan. I would say there were enough different qualities of Thursday, Friday, Saturday action to make it a compelling week to speak about.
For sure. All right. Let's play your reverbs. 408 Verbal One again is the phone number, 408-837-2251. Let's get things kickstarted the way we often like to do so. Here are your week two reverbs.
This slate of games on right now is so bad. I honestly wouldn't care if my best friend had scheduled his wedding for right now.
This is Matt calling from the Three Rivers Casino in the North Shore in Pittsburgh.
Hey, it's Joe from Brooklyn.
It's Neil from Corpus Christi, a proud CMU alum.
This is Todd from Birmingham.
And it's 8:15. And I may be a little buzzed because it's going to take a lot to get through watching Penn State play Pitt today.
Man, that Penn State defense is so soft. If only we had a song for that.
The creamiest, creamiest sausage you get from Mr. Frosty.
Hey, a bunch of Penn State fans are headed to the airport in Happy Valley because you never know who may get fired on the tarmac on a random Saturday.
A bonus round of real Penn Live comment or not for you. What was James Fraudlin thinking calling that last pass in the end zone? Penn State should offer Pitt a coaching staff trade.
TCU and Arkansas are going into double overtime, and I would be very willing to bet a high amount of money that Arkansas is going to find a way to blow this. I'll call you back in a few minutes to make sure.
Arkansas-TCU is going into overtime right now. Regardless of how this game ends, you cannot deny that it is currently Bert Kember.
What a game, fellas. Just when I thought there was no excitement to be had at all, Arkansas and TCU didn't disappoint.
Hey, Dan and Todd, Dominic from Dallas again. The reverse jinx worked. Old Bert wins. So nice, Bert.
You guys can keep your Kenny Trill, your Kenny Hill, your Chubiakis. All I want is turpentine. Let's go.
Currently, Texas looks to be the best team in the Big 12, and that is just close to being borderline erotic.
Hey, I would freak out about how my Nebraska players were playing, but then I just turn to the Central Michigan-Oklahoma State game and say, well, at least we're not facing the Chippewas.
Ooh-wah! Chip! Ooh-wah! Go Chip!
Hey, Big 12, we're waiting for our call. Fire up Chip! Bring us in the conference, boys, let's go!
I hear 450,000 beers were to be sold at Bristol tonight. The reason? To make it even harder to see the field.
It always seems like the weeks when everybody says no good games are happening is when the best games happen.
Hey, Ty and Dan, just got done listening to my Gators boat race, Kentucky.
ESPN presents 30 for 30. The Kentucky-Florida football rivalry.
I'm really glad Brian Polian brought Charlie Weiss's defense back to South Bend with him this weekend.
This is one that's a long time coming. It's time to talk to your great-grandkids about an undefeated Army.
Could 2016 be the year of secretly decent Army West Point? I'm scared and confused.
And I'm a big Troy fan, and we just got robbed. Sunbelt, you know, maybe we're making a comeback, maybe not.
Just watched Navy score on UConn again, and my question is, why does Bob Diaco wear a long-sleeve shirt when it's 100 degrees out? This game is horrible.
If we put Kalen Ballage on the giant hamster wheel from Double Dare, how long until we achieve energy independence?
So I watched about a quarter of my Purdue Boilers on TV and decided I'd rather watch a replay of Blue Crush on the Fuse Network.
This was supposed to be a down week in college football, but 14 hours later, I'm still watching games. I love this sport.
All right, Dan. There you go. Another lively batch of reverbs. Thank you again for calling in, for giving us your input. We, as always, do appreciate it. Where should we start?
Do you want to start with the most entertaining and potentially most telling game of the week, or do you not want to talk about Idaho State, Colorado?
I was going to say, are you going to Texas UTEP or Ohio and Kansas? Where do you want to go?
Let's save Tennessee for second, but let's go to the most entertaining game. And that, to me, especially given the end was not in doubt, Arkansas-TCU.
Arkansas-TCU. So the final score was Arkansas 41, TCU 38. This one went to double overtime. To be fair, Dan, this was a boring game for three quarters. And then, hold on.
Okay.
Dare we say.
Borderline erotic. Borderline erotic.
For me, it was not until the fourth quarter that the fireworks started going off, thanks to Mr. Kevontae Turpin, your boy. Who basically took over the game for TCU and got them back in things. This thing came off the hizzy, if it isn't too millennial to say that.
Oh, it's not millennial. It's not anything to say that anymore, Ty. It is unfortunate.
TCU crawled their way back into this thing. They had a lead. They were up 28-20. Kenny Hill then proceeds to give the good old throat slash gesture, which leads to a 15-yard penalty for Arkansas on the ensuing kickoff. They get the ball back. They march down the field with minimal resistance. They score no problem. They get a two-point conversion on that double reverse oop-de-oop pass that went to Austin Allen. Game goes to overtime. More dramatics ensue in overtime, but ultimately Arkansas wins the game by, again, a 41-38 margin. Really fun game, at least one quarter of which I would say had the full attention of the college football ether.
I think it's proper to say Arkansas's defense has a long way to go, but TCU's offense did them some favors in having Kenny Hill throw the ball 56 times. It was a relatively efficient day for Kenny Hill. I mean, he put up almost 500 yards of total offense, but I always hesitate when a team has to count on somebody that not unpredictable, but not all that complete a quarterback for the, like, what was it, 56 attempts and 15 carries. So 71 touches is a lot. So concerned about that for TCU moving forward, would like to see a little bit more balance. But in terms of the scope of this game, Raleigh Williams was an absolute workhorse, really helped pace this Arkansas offense when they were building a lead and near the end of the game. Austin Allen, I felt like he just, it's so unfair to say that he looked like his older brother, but it was the kind of win that Brandon Allen was pulling out in the latter stages of his career for the Hogs. Drew Morgan, it was nice to see him step up and sort of assume a number one receiver role for the Hogs. And yeah, Kenny Hill, throat slashing and taking the good with the bad, and Kevontae Turpin just giving good after good after good after good. It was a hell of a game. And the fact that Arkansas has again survived a game, this time against a good opponent, last week not as much, I think speaks volumes about, even with their weaknesses up front on both sides of the ball, the ability to close out weird games is definitely a positive for me.
Absolutely. And on the TCU side of things,
mm-hmm.
we talked about it on our preview show. 41 points against South Dakota State in week one was obviously not what we had expected. TCU was, in case you don't know by now, my playoff pick.
Yeah.
And I liked TCU.
In the present tense?
Yeah, no, not in the present tense.
Okay.
In the past tense, they were.
Okay.
I liked TCU before the start of the year because the defense looked to be very experienced. You mm-hmm. figure you give Gary Patterson a solid, experienced defense with which to work, and he's going to work wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't see it against South Dakota State, and I was hoping we'd see it against Arkansas, and we simply didn't. We simply didn't. It's going to be a long year for TCU if they can't get the defense in order, because Arkansas doesn't have what I would consider a dynamic offense, and they were able to score in crunch time pretty much at will.
Yeah.
They got to shore that up in the Big 12. There are a lot of powerful offenses in the Big 12, and I'm a little concerned about where it goes from here for TCU. Like the offense, hate the defense.
Okay. Well, I mean, they're a Big 12 team. There yeah. it is.
There it is. There it is. Let's go to that game, the battle at Bristol.
Yes.
Okay, you wanted to talk about this one. A very cool...
Don't put this on me, Ty.
Very cool setting for a game. Bristol Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
The official attendance was 156,990. Mm-hmm. It is, as you might expect, the largest crowd ever for a college football game. I'd have to imagine, Dan, there weren't any bad seats in the house except for pretty much all of them, because
I was going to say
for pretty much all of them, because when you saw the crowd shots, like the first person look
mm-hmm.
from the 50 yard line seats towards the field, it didn't look like those people could see a damn thing.
No, it looked pretty distant. I'm looking up how far Allentown is away from Bristol Motor Speedway. Because if you squint from where you're sitting right now, your vantage
my
point
seats
is,
are just... These poor people probably paid a pretty penny, and it looked like they were watching from the International Space Station.
In all fairness, it was probably very cool to tailgate there. It was probably cool to just behold the spectacle and sight of Bristol, even if you're far away, to see that screen on the cables, sort of what felt like hovering over the field.
Yeah.
That was fine. That was legitimately, unequivocally, objectively cool. But, sorry, I don't know why I used so many adjectives there. I'm very proud of myself. Bristol Motor Speedway in Bristol, Tennessee from Allentown is 516 miles.
By the way, I think we went over on your Bud Foster prop.
Oh, my God. That was the easiest one I've ever come up with.
There was one point in the game, and it might not have been the first quarter,
mm-hmm.
but there was one point in the game where I was starting to fade a little bit, and I was dozing a little bit. And in my ear, it sounded like Reese Davis and Kirk Herbstreit just said, Bud Foster, Bud Foster, Bud Foster.
Yeah.
So that was a hell of a prop bet. And I feel like it's something we could do every week if we really wanted.
Yeah, it was their version of Malkovich, 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 Bud Foster, Bud Foster. Yeah, you're right. It was easy.
So we still need to get the final readout on how many arrests there were. I'm assuming somebody's going to write that story. But let's talk about the actual game. Tennessee wins 45-24. They came out flat, just like they did a week ago. They came out flat. Tech takes a really quick lead. They're up 14-0. It's looking like everything's going in their favor. And then Tennessee gets a fumble.
Mm-hmm.
And then, only then, the Vols start to actually feel it. The good news, Dan, is that Josh Dobbs accounted for 5 touchdowns. And that's probably a nice little boost in the arm for him.
Totally fine.
The bad news is that the passing game, I think, is still busted. There's still a problem there. He only threw for 91 yards. He had 3 touchdowns, granted. But still, kind of yuck. At least as far as the passing game goes. Would you agree?
I would agree. So I would say, I agree. Yeah, he had 2 passes for, I think, a combined 61 yards. Which means he had 8 for 30 outside of those completions.
Nice.
So, yeah, not phenomenal. But the fact is, Tennessee, and I've been sitting on this for a while, Ty, with that fumble in the second quarter, that's when things on a speedway took a left turn.
Oh, yeah. Look at you.
Balls. Yeah.
Look at you.
Yeah. So the good news is, and this is not unlike what I feel about Arkansas, the good news is Tennessee started out flat and Arkansas came out big. But they found a way to win in a game in which, for extended periods of time, they look kind of like garbage. And I don't feel particularly great about Tennessee moving forward because they're going to have to win in multiple ways against their schedule within the conference. What are they going to do when a team takes away the run?
Yeah.
And Josh Dobbs needs to, you know, either down 5 and, you know, things are somewhat open on the outside or downfield and they need to drive 79 yards in 3 minutes or something. That's the concern for me, that Josh Dobbs is a senior who, and this is something Ryan Nanny, Wake Up College Football, has brought up, looks kind of like a sophomore who's promising, but not putting things together quite yet. And he's a senior. He's been in this program for a long time. Whereas with Virginia Tech, they have their moments, but certainly they are in need of depth and talent and recruiting to the offensive system that Justin Fuente is evolving and putting into place. But Trayvon McMillan had a big run. Gerard Evans had moments, particularly with his legs, but also through the air, where he was able to find players sitting in a zone, finding players streaking open, the things that you would like to see from promising quarterbacks. So Tennessee, and the best thing on the field was their defense. The best thing that happened to Tennessee was their patience and not freaking out when they got down 14-0 early. But given the expectation difference between Tennessee and Virginia Tech, I'm a little bit worried about Tennessee moving forward on offense.
Here's Tennessee's schedule. Next week, they've got a game against Ohio, but then it gets real in a hurry.
Yep.
End of September, at home against Florida.
It's a good Florida defense.
Yeah. First week of October, on the road at Georgia.
That's fine.
Second week of October, on the road at Texas A&M. That's a pretty good defense.
TBD, but yeah, good defense.
And then middle of October, they come back home against Alabama. I think we know the drill on that one. We're going to find out pretty quickly what Tennessee can do when a team takes away the run. And to the point of Virginia Tech, before we move on, too careless with the football, right?
Mm-hmm.
Too careless, yeah. Too many turnovers, 8 penalties, just too many mistakes in general. But you're right, a lot of promise there. And I have every confidence in Justin Fuente to get all these things sorted out just in time for them to ruin Notre Dame's season in late November.
Listen, Ty, Virginia Tech scored 24 points against a good defense. This is not a great thing for a lot of teams looking to compete to win a conference, but Virginia Tech isn't in that position, and they definitely weren't in position to score 24 points against a good team recently. So,
nope.
Great.
Let's talk about Penn State and Pitt.
Let's talk Penn State and Pitt, and that's a good jump off to the ACC and then the Big Ten.
Pitt 42, Penn State 39. So, we weren't right necessarily about Pitt covering the point spread here, but we were pretty accurate when it came to how this game was going to play out. Because Pitt dominated the offensive line. This was something that was pretty easy to see coming. They dominate the offensive line. They weren't even trying to hide it. All right. 56 rushing attempts, 341 on the ground. James Conner had a pretty good day. Matt Canada went at Penn State with a lot of jet sweeps mixed in with stuff up the middle to keep them off balance. It worked, I think, exactly the way we thought it was going to work. What I didn't necessarily expect was for it to be so lopsided. Because they only tried to pass the ball 15 times with Nate Peterman. If this is a theme for Pitt moving forward, I think that's an issue. But certainly in a game like this where they had such a glaring mismatch in their favor, it seemed to make a whole lot of sense.
In a winning effort, Ty.
In a winning effort, for sure.
Yeah.
Trace McSorley, look.
I like that's your let me level with you, everybody.
Let's be clear.
Look. All right.
If you had a chance to watch this game, my guess is that you have a much different impression of Trace McSorley than if you just went back and look at the box score. Mm-hmm. If you look at the box score, it says that McSorley had, 332 passing.
332, yeah.
Do not let that number fool you into thinking that he's the next big thing at Penn State. As college quarterbacks go, he is a below average quarterback with a below average arm.
Okay.
And he's got a lot of other intangibles working for him. He's very calm. People like to throw the poise word out there. It's an overused descriptor at this point in the world of football, but he is calm. He has a ton of confidence. He made a clutch throw to Deshaun Hamilton that should have been caught and should have been the game winner, but it was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lot of promise there with him. I think he can get better. But like we said on a review show a week ago, at some point that arm is going to fail you and that overconfidence is going to get you. And when you combine the two, that's how you get a second down interception in the back of the end zone on a pass that didn't need to be thrown. And that's why Penn State lost, because they fought and they scraped and they clawed with Saquon Barkley. They got their way back into this game, Dan, but it was a bad decision by McSorley that led to their demise here. Pitt played a great game. They did. They need to be better defensively, especially in crunch time, but McSorley let them down here on a pass that didn't need to be thrown.
I was imagining your analysis as Gloria Stefan. Confidence gonna get you. Who was the last Penn State quarterback to have a rating over 140?
Matt McGloin?
Nope.
Michael Robinson?
Nope.
Zach Mills?
You're going back a little too far.
Okay. Darryl Clark?
Darryl Clark in 2009, which doesn't seem like it would be a huge thing, especially considering how everybody felt about Christian Hackenberg before he got there and while he was there. But yeah, that was the last quarterback to be. And that's, I think, a baseline of Penn State. And granted, the defense was not there yesterday, but that's the baseline for Penn State. If they're fielding a good defense, just be efficient. Just throw, get to a first down marker more often than not on drives and like severely limit the picks. And basically Penn State's looking for Scott Tolson and they are yet to find Scott Tolson.
Yeah. Well, again, I think there is some
promise. Where's the promise
here
with Penn State? Where do you see? Because listen, DeAndre Tompkins, Deshaun Hamilton, Barkley was good.
Yep.
If not, I mean, not that impressive, but good against Pitt. Where do you see if Pitt is going to turn a corner? If Penn State's going to turn a corner, where will the Nittany Lions be led?
Well, they need to get their offense working, I think, at a higher gear. Saquon, you say he wasn't impressive. He was very impressive. He looked good in this game. He just didn't have a whole lot of holes to work with.
Right, that's true. And he had a very nice catch for a touchdown, yeah.
Sure, he's the real deal, and he's clearly their best player. They need to find ways to get him the ball, and they need to block for him. Now, the line, I think, through two games has been improved over what it was a year ago.
Had to be, yeah.
Has to be better. Hmm? Defensively, that's going to be the thing for them, because along the line, just replacing so much, now they've got some injury issues that have crept in as well. I think they can get away with a defense like that in the Big Ten because there aren't a whole lot of electric offenses.
Mm-hmm.
But it's some combination of the defensive line playing better, keeping them in games, and then the offense playing at a higher level than it has the first 2 weeks. But this was, I think, a promising next step for them. They're just not there yet.
What is our new Pitt nickname, if not secretly decent? Or are they secretly decent? Because they looked to be out in the open decent before the fourth quarter.
I think they're cautiously decent, Pitt.
Cautiously decent. Okay.
Yeah. Because the Matt Canada offense leaves a lot to be desired, even though, again, 341 on the ground is pretty impressive. But I'd like to see more of a balance. And I think they're going to need to show more of a balance against some of the teams in their schedule.
And part of that is depth on defense, sort of playing how they play in the first and second quarters later in the game and sort of summoning that that extra energy.
All right. Clemson 30, Troy 24.
Ooh.
My hunch is that a lot of folks didn't see this game because it wasn't really on TV.
Do you know what channel it was on in New York?
ACC Network. I got it on Watch ESPN using someone else's password.
So it was on the ACC Network in New York, which is not a real network in the way that other conference networks are. It's just sort of a consortium of local affiliates or something. WLNY, channel number 55.
Okay. Yeah.
That's where I found this game.
Let's give a shout out to our pal Travis Haney.
Oh my goodness, yes.
He sort of called this one. He said Troy's a good football team. You needed to watch this game to get a sense for what was going on. You can't just look at the box score again. You need to like get a sense for the flow here. That's what told the story. Troy's a good team, to their credit. But Clemson was dead. Clemson was flat for four quarters in this game. They had far and away more talent on the field, but a lot of dumb moves, turnovers, Ray McCloud dropping the ball, pulled the old Deshaun Jackson before getting into the end zone on a, what was that, a punt return for a touchdown?
Yep, a great punt return before that point, yeah.
My only real observation here, I'm not going to take too much away from this and say Clemson's not good enough to make the playoff, because we know they are. My only observation through 2 weeks of Clemson is that this is not the same team from a year ago, in that I'm not seeing the killer instinct quite yet.
This is not your slightly older brother's Clemson team.
Exactly. Last year's team would go out there and rip off your arms and legs.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that same level of killer instinct through 2 weeks. They could find it. They could find it. It might be at some point when they play a game against a team that is a little bit more on equal footing with them. Mm-hmm. But through two games, not feeling it quite yet.
Yeah, the big difference to me is that Clemson is struggling to run the ball. And against Troy, Deshaun Watson threw the ball 53 times. 53! And it wasn't a good day through the air. I think he averaged 5.5 yards per attempt. The fact that Wayne Gallman has not been, I think he only had 8 or 9 carries. The fact that he isn't being fed, that the fact that the offensive line is not opening up holes for the running game, it's affecting everything. Deshaun Watson should be throwing the ball 30 times against Troy. They should be dominating on the ground, because that Clemson offense, much like most offenses in college football outside of a few select air raid schools, it's based around the run and what they can do in play action and the threats that the linebackers are held closer to the line to pay attention to. And Clemson is not keeping teams true to that. And we can say Troy is decent, and shout out to Trav Haney, you're right, our chief Sunbelt correspondent.
Right.
And I think we can confidently say Troy, America's one true Trojan team.
Sure.
But so disappointing. The turnovers, the carelessness. This is not the mark right now. I would not say Clemson, they came into this week number 2 in the country, they do not look like a top 5 nor a top 10 team at this moment. And because we don't have a big sample size, because the season changes pretty quickly, they certainly could be in the coming weeks. But right now, I would want a little bit of Clemson if I were a decent team, because they look lost. Okay. Offensive.
Taking a hard line against the Tigers.
Yeah. Right now, if what is the expectation of Clemson? They return everybody from on offense from a championship contending team, and they're coming out flat and irresponsible. I'm fine with playing Clemson if I'm a team like Louisville, or even if North Carolina gets their act together, or Florida State certainly has to be feeling pretty good right now. But we'll see. Coming weeks could be a completely different story.
Flat and Irresponsible, by the way, available.
Yes.
At some point in the next 3 weeks at your local Sam Goody locations. It's our limited edition EP.
Yes. It's very graphic.
All right. Let's talk about our first sponsor here this evening. It's brought to you by Squarespace, our good friends. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. Here's the way this works. I'm going to cut right to the chase. You can start a free trial today at squarespace.com and enter the offer code VERBAL to get 10% off your very first purchase. Now, have you decided if you're doing the wedding thing yet? Are you going to do the wedding website?
I am doing a wedding thing. We'll be doing a wedding website. Hopefully Squarespace encourages password protection.
That's what I did on mine.
Okay, what was your password now that we're done with your process?
I think my password was celebrate.
Ooh, saucy.
Yeah, I tried to go with some sort of verb, some sort of action verb to get people in the swing of things.
The answer to your question is I will be constructing a wedding website, and Squarespace seems like the best option to me, Ty.
It's easy. You can create it with Squarespace through a simple, intuitive process. Add and arrange your content and features with a single click of a mouse. You also get a free custom domain. So, you know, danswedding.com. Give it a shot. Squarespace makes adding a domain to your site easy and simple. If you sign up for a year, you'll receive a custom domain for free for a year. They've also got great templates and seamless commerce tools. I know you're not necessarily looking to sell yourself off, Dan, but
I'm going
to
sell tickets to my wedding.
If you were looking to engage in some commerce, they've got seamless commerce tools, in addition to customer support 24/7, just on the off chance something goes wrong, 24/7 customer support every member of their customer care team is experienced and knows how to work with Squarespace to get you what you want. Again, free trial, squarespace.com. The offer code's Verbal. You can get 10% off your very first purchase, Dan. Offer code Verbal, 10% mm-hmm. off.
The next time I go to buy a sandwich or go to the post office or something, I need to buy something, send a package, I'm going to lead with, hi, I would like to engage in some commerce, please.
There you go.
I would like to engage in some commerce. Thank you for helping me.
Very good. Okay.
Okay.
So Florida State and Louisville are two teams that play in week three. Mm-hmm. That's like the high noon kickoff game. It's at Louisville. Should be a barn burner. I know we're both excited about it. Florida State won 52-8 over Charleston Southern. Mm-hmm. Louisville won on Friday evening, I believe, 62-20. The big story there again is Lamar Jackson, 610 total yards, five more touchdowns, now has 13 on the year mm-hmm. through two games, which is crazy. You look at these two teams, you look at what they've done to this point, Dan, do you favor one or the other in that matchup next week just to win outright?
Between Florida State and Louisville?
Yeah.
Yeah, Florida State.
Okay. There are a lot of people who are going to jump on Louisville. That's why I ask.
Yeah, and it's totally fair considering what Lamar Jackson is and how special he has looked thus far against not great competition, but Syracuse certainly better than Charlotte. But to me, Florida State right now, with how DeAndre Francois evolved over the course of the Ole Miss game, and certainly looked yesterday, I believe, against Charleston Southern, what the pass rush looks like for Florida State, it's the challenge for Louisville, I don't think, is going to be moving the ball. They're going to score. They're going to have electric drives, whatever. It is the depth on the Louisville defense that I'm getting a little bit concerned about holding up against a more pro-style power rush with Dalvin Cook attack that I just don't know how many teams are suited to play against that. And I like Louisville's defense, fine, but I don't know if they have the top-end talent to compete with Florida State for four quarters at this point.
Yeah, and that's fair. That was what we discussed in our preview.
And it's on the road. Granted, it's on the road. It's at Louisville. And I think it's an early kick. I don't know who that favors.
Noon kick.
Probably favors Florida State.
Yeah. Well, whoever it favors, I think you're right about the defensive talent. This is a team in Louisville that brings back a ton defensively. And that's part of the reason why we're so high on them. Everyone seems to like Louisville so much, right? But again, it's a question of talent. How good is that experience? How good are those guys? And can they go toe-to-toe with a Florida State? It obviously helps to have a guy like a Lamar Jackson, who you know is going to be able to move the football.
Eight damn touchdowns against Syracuse.
I mean, he's really good.
Yeah. But
the question really is, how good is that defense going to be in crunch time against DeAndre Francois. And Dalvin Cook and Travis Rudolph?
By the way, it's Dalvin Chef, sir. Cooks are inexperienced. Anybody can be a cook. Not anybody can be Dalvin. Dalvin Chef.
Dalvin Chef.
I really hope that doesn't stick. That was a terrible.
That's pretty bad.
Right. But before we look ahead, Ty, there was an ending that was, I wouldn't even say controversial. I would just say bad. Oklahoma State lost. And they shouldn't have lost. And it was a wonderful play with which they lost for Central Michigan. But now we are going on another year. If you look back to last year's Duke-Miami results, in which this one is clear cut. This one is letter of the law. And I think it were MAC officials
calling
this game.
Yep.
Central Michigan was given a play that they should not have been given considering the final Oklahoma State play. I believe it was intentional grounding on fourth down, which should have a loss of down results in the end of a game, end of regulation, whatever.
Yeah, so Oklahoma State was just trying to pull that move.
Right.
There's a couple seconds on the clock. Mason Rudolph dropped back and just gun it deep. Just throw it somewhere, right? They call intentional grounding on Oklahoma State. Now, that should not lead to an untimed down for the team that, during that play, played defense, right? It's different if it's, you know, a different set of circumstances. But that situation should not lead to an untimed down for anybody. Central Michigan gets it. They throw up the Hail Mary. It was a cool play, as college football plays go.
Right.
That was fun. That was awesome. I saw you had the reins on our Twitter account and you were writing in all caps. Everybody was very excited.
Oh, yeah.
But that's beside the point because that should not have happened.
Right.
Where I kind of have a problem with it is, why can't they just say, oh, we screwed up and actually it's Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State wins the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure what is preventing, because I know there are some bylaws, and I don't know if it's by conference or NCAA, where it's, you know, extenuating circumstances, you know, above and beyond something bad happened. These are grownups that screw this up. Not an interpretation of a vague rule, of a cut and dry thing that I don't care if Central Michigan celebrated their amazing game, quote unquote, game winning play. If a half hour, everybody agrees that it was a total mistake and should be nullified. The NCAA isn't new to saying something didn't happen or didn't exist. Right. Reggie Bush, USC's 2004 season.
Who?
Exactly.
Who?
Also, this very different situation. It's not like Central Michigan broke any rules, but grownups need to fix grownup mistakes. And this was a grownup mistake. I don't care if there's celebration. I don't care if the game ends. I don't care if the scoreboard changes. Oklahoma State was wronged and it needs to be fixed.
Yeah, this is not like one of those plays where we're debating about when the whistle blew.
Right.
And if it hadn't blown when it did, everyone would have tackled the ball carrier and the outcome would have been... No, this is the last play of the game.
Yep.
This is the last play of the game. You can correct this, and I think they should. Now, I know there are rules against it, and I'm sure people will chime in on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and via email and let us know why we're wrong.
I don't care.
I don't care either. It feels wrong to Oklahoma State. They won this game. It wasn't a pretty game.
Right.
It wasn't a pretty game. This game never should have been this close to begin with.
Agreed.
However,
but it happens.
A win's a win, and an egregious interpretation of the rules like this needs to be corrected.
So yeah, I feel Oklahoma bad State. Him. Oklahoma State has every right to a bad win with proper refereeing that anybody else has, and they didn't get it.
Yeah. All right.
A game that almost went in this direction. I know you're very excited. You have lots of thoughts and breaking down the depth chart and traditions,
yeah,
and themes and schemes of Nichols.
Yeah.
Nichols almost beat Georgia.
What the hell was this, Dan? Hell was going on here? Because this isn't like North Dakota State or Eastern Washington or South Dakota State. Nichols is not an FCS powerhouse.
No. Not so much.
What the hell was this?
Really bad offensive line play for Georgia. Crazy untimely turnovers and an inability to control the clock, to control the line of scrimmage. Nick Chubb, I think he had 4 yards per carry, but if you take away his longest run, it was like 3 yards a carry. He did not help himself. He did not help Georgia. The offensive line gave him no help. Jacob Eason was at best underwhelming and average, and that's okay. True freshman quarterback, but against Nichols, this is the game where he should be 18 of 24 for 327 and spread the ball around, get everybody in a rhythm, and just wasn't. Just, man, I've become a lot more concerned about Georgia than I was before. And I felt pretty good about Georgia, given the talent level, even the gaps that they had to fill in. This was, it's an embarrassing day for Georgia football.
Georgia now has 8 straight SEC conference games, including one this coming week against a Missouri team that hung 61 on Eastern Michigan. Now, neither one of us is that excited about Missouri's offense, but this is a pretty good start. A monster game for Drew Locke. They've got a defense. It could be an interesting game.
Mixed start considering week one for Mizzou, but yes, the offense has more promise now than it has in the last couple of years.
Georgia wins 26-24.
Yeah.
Over Nichols. Yeah. Wow. Let's talk about the Holy War.
Holy War. Yeah.
Only one member of this broadcasting duo, Dan Rubenstein.
Yeah.
Had the courage and the foresight and really the fortitude to predict that BYU would score 19 points. And holy crap, they scored 19 points. I should have gone to Vegas and put money on that. Utah wins the game. 20-19, right? Who didn't see that one coming? A defensive struggle in the Holy War between these two teams, both of which had some questions about their offense headed into this game. Quite honestly, a disgusting act, this game. 9 turnovers, 19 penalties. Utah somehow wins despite having 6 turnovers. Just a mess from top to bottom. A fun game, though. We had some calls from the Holy War, had some emails and tweets, and people always get up for this game. It just always seems to be a defensive struggle. This one was very ugly. And did we learn much about either of these teams in this game, Dan?
Well, the fact that BYU has scored 18 and 19 points in their first two games, one in a win, one in a loss. I love the fact that BYU is just knocking on that 20-point door. Just week in, week out, knocking on that 20-point door. Yes, we learned Kalani Sitake has put together a good defense, and that's in combination, in concert with Utah putting together a not-so-great offense, and Troy Williams being particularly careless with the ball when throwing into a good defense. And we also learned that Kalani Sitake makes correct stone-faced decisions at the end of a game. Big ball decision.
Yeah.
It didn't work out. The actual play call probably wasn't the best. Taysom Hill probably should have figured out some way to check out of it if he had seen the jailbreak blitz coming at him. But I like the decision to go for two on the road. It didn't work out. BYU is going to be fine. I like the way this team plays. If they can develop more of an offense week in and week out, Utah does what Utah does, and that is survive. I mean, they survived, what, six turnovers?
Yeah.
Am I reading this correctly?
Yep, yeah. Yep. I got it in front of me, too.
An incredibly ugly game. And you know what, Ty? Every team in the nation would be happy to take the quality ability to survive ugliness. And Utah is a survivor, man. Utah is Michelle Williams. Utah is Beyonce Knowles. And by God, Utah is Kelly Rowland.
Okay. We're going to isolate that sound and add it to the soundboard
along
with our 18-wheeler sound, which is in production, and maybe a Kalani Sitake big ball sound. But went for two. Didn't work out for BYU. They end up with 19 points. Puffs out chest. Okay.
Knocking on that 20-point door.
Nah, let's stay out west here.
Okay. A lot of fun games out west.
Yeah, this, my friends, is what you call a good old-fashioned shootout. 1,264 yards of offense in Arizona State, Texas Tech. 68-55, your final score here, Dan. You mentioned at the top of the show, Arizona State running back Kalen Ballage had eight total touchdowns in this football game. You know, if you were one of the dreamers, one of the pie-eyed dreamers, who thought to yourself, self, could this be the year that Texas Tech gets its defense in order? You would be sorely mistaken.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Not a good showing for Texas Tech defensively. Pat Holmes, for his part, he might be the new Nick Foles. 540 passing, six total touchdowns in a losing effort. But I'm kind of excited about ASU after seeing this. I didn't really know what to expect from the Sun Devils this year, but a nice game, obviously, for Ballage. Manny Wilkins looking impressive this week.
First-year starter, very athletic.
What are your thoughts here?
Thoughts are as follows. Cliff Kingsbury has been in Lubbock for 4 years, and he has managed to build half a team. And that's probably not going to continue to sit well year in and year out if they can't build even an average, even a below-average defense, which Texas Tech does not field right now. As for Patrick Mahomes specifically, incredibly talented. Feel really bad for him. I don't know if he is going to graduate after this year. Is he a junior this year?
Patrick
he is a junior.
Mahomes. Yeah, he's a junior.
Oh, man. Could be a hell of a grad transfer somewhere. Arizona State becomes the Pac-12's ultimate wild card right now because defense isn't all that great, but Manny Wilkins looks like a danger. Kalen Ballage is 100% a danger. He had, I think, 15 touches and 8 touchdowns. He is ridiculous, and he is more of a slot back than anything else. He only had 13 carries, a couple catches, but just has a nose for the end zone and love watching him. Love that Arizona State was able to flip the field a couple times. They had a couple picks. The Arizona State Sun Devils are not particularly good, but they are particularly dangerous. And I think that's kind of fun in a pretty wide open looking Pac-12 South. So good for ASU. This game probably lasted 5.5 hours. I was not awake for the end of this game, but it was probably fun for people who did on the West Coast.
Speaking of losing efforts, it is really a gunfight at sundown between Patrick Mahomes and Luke Falk from Washington State. Luke Falk threw the ball 71 times, 480 yards and 4 touchdowns in that losing effort. So They lose this game on the road to Boise State, 31-28. Boise has a 17-point lead around the start of the fourth quarter. There was an early touchdown in the fourth quarter. They go up by 17. Wazoo comes charging back. They bring it to within three late in the game. If you are a fan of dubious, let's say, James Franklin-style clock management, the final two drives in this game were for you. They were for you. How are teams, Dan? How is this still a thing? Because as far as I can tell, the clock still counts down at the same speed it did 100 years ago. The one rule that really has not changed is the speed at which a second occurs. How are we still doing this year in and year out with bad clock management? Because both Boise and Washington State flubbed it.
I was only half watching at this point, but what was very clear, and I admire Washington State and a lot of these air raid teams who are, listen, this, we are a passing team. We are living by the pass, dying by the pass. This is who we are. We're going to do it better than anybody else. But situationally, against a team that is talented but vulnerable like Boise State looks right now, Washington State needs to be able to adjust and do things in different ways and just, let's just throw it more. Let's just throw it more. Luke Falk had a totally fine day, not overwhelming, not for an all Pac-12 quarterback like he finished last season as. Washington State took a step forward last year running the ball and helping to control the clock on the ground. They have taken a step back this year. Yeah, I think it's fair to say after starting the season 0-2. Got good games from their receivers, which is not a surprise since they also sort of double as running backs in that scheme. But yeah, Boise State tried to hand it to them. I think Brett Ribbon turned the ball over a few times. And while they were good on the ground, they didn't dominate Wazoo on the ground. Thomas Spurbeck, a very good receiver for Boise State. But it's not like Boise State is an unwinnable game given Wazoo's talent level and improvements over these past couple seasons. And Wazoo is just a team that can't capitalize and can't adjust to do things even just a little bit differently. And again, admirable, but that's the ship they're sinking in.
All right, let's run through some of the other games rapid fire here that we didn't have a chance to cover in a little more detail. But first, let's get a word from our sponsor, DraftKings, Dan.
Yes.
As you know, football season, the NFL about to kick off in like an hour and 5 minutes here. On my clock in front of me.
The first Sunday. It apparently started Thursday night.
Oh, is that so? It did start Thursday. You're right. Yeah.
Our favorite Cam Newton.
Trevor Siemian with like the only good thing for Northwestern football all weekend.
I think, didn't Pat Fitzgerald wear shorts for the game?
Okay, that too.
But there's that.
We got in trouble because we didn't mention that Dan Mullen wore shorts in week one.
People, Alabama fans, way into Dan Mullen's legs.
The two things that they don't like are us neglecting to discuss Dan Mullen's legs, and when we like to, you know, push buttons and instead of crimson go maroon with the jersey color.
Yeah. Colors of Dan Mullen's legs. Come on. These are a few of Alabama fans' favorite things.
Football season's finally here. It's time to put your fantasy knowledge to the test and win your share of $100,000 in DraftKings free week one contest. That's right. DraftKings hosting a free contest this weekend. Mm-hmm. Hurry on out. Sign up now. $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs. As you know, DraftKings.com, the destination for 1 week fantasy football. 1 week means no season-long commitments. Play wherever you want, whenever you want, with the players you want. Just pick your contest, draft your players, follow your team live, Dan Rubenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Renew old rivalries with friends. Prove that you are the superior GM. Or you could try 50-50 contests where the top half of all entries win cash. DraftKings, they even have contests exclusively for beginners. So there's something for everybody right now over at DraftKings. If you hurry on out there to DraftKings.com, and if you use the code SOLID, you can play for free this weekend. It's a $100,000 fantasy contest. This contest, again, 100% free. No reason not to play again. That's SOLID as your offer code. Play for free. Share $100,000 maybe this weekend. I don't know what you're up to.
Good amount of money.
Yeah. DraftKings.com, DraftKings.com. Of course, do check and see what eligibility restrictions may apply to you in your area. See DraftKings.com for details.
Yes.
All right.
You want to finish out the Pac-12?
Oregon. Yeah.
Oregon. Your lock of the week.
Oregon was my lock of the week. They did not cover.
No, they did not.
They did win 44-26. Let me ask you this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't need a full breakdown of this game. What I need to know,
get it anyway.
What I need to know from you is whether or not Dakota Prukop's growing comfort level in this offense is making you more or less excited for the Zaire, if you will, when it starts around the springtime.
Malik Zaire will not be transferring to Oregon, but I am excited by Dakota Prukop and the steps he's taking towards becoming a very good college football quarterback against unproven competition at this point. Virginia coming off of an FCS loss to Richmond, a little bit of an ugly one at that. But as it relates to Oregon, Virginia, the story here is both Dakota Prukop becoming more and more comfortable in this offense. And as we've seen these past few years, against good and bad teams, Oregon receivers are going to get open, both because of the system, because of their speed, whatever the case, because of the threat of the running game. And Dakota Prukop is finding those open receivers now. He had a 77-yard touchdown pass, largely after the catch to Olympic hurdler, Devin Allen.
Devin Allen, yeah.
And who hurdled as a celebration, but he was open down the seam and he found him quickly and he had a couple of those throws. He went through his progressions more comfortably. And right now, as it stands, given that almost nobody has played two good teams or even one good team, he looks like a top 15 or 20 quarterback in the country. This coming week against Nebraska will go a long ways to sort of cementing it one way or the other. Royce Freeman had a huge game against, granted, again, not that good of a Virginia team, but he had over 200 yards on the ground. The other big story for the game is Oregon's defensive front. They've got green linebackers. I think they're starting a JUCO guy at middle linebacker. They've got a true freshman in Troy Dye, who, again, is sort of a take the good, take the bad type. That front's getting pushed around. And if they're going to be pushed around and things aren't adjusted and there is time to fix, that is extremely worrisome. Luckily, Nebraska's not all that great on the ground, but there are teams in the Pac-12, Christian McCaffrey, Miles Gaskin, play for a couple of them, that can take advantage. So they need to do way better in the gaps because Virginia ran all over them. And I'm a little bit worried. The defense was sloppy, but there were good moments and they sort of clamped down when they needed to. But Virginia should not be scoring 26 points against Oregon.
I agree.
52-16, 52-17, something like that. But Oregon, without a doubt, offensively, the offensive line looked a lot better without their starting left tackle for the majority of this game. Oregon's offense looked a lot more together and dangerous, which is pretty good for me.
Okay. For what it's worth, you mentioned that Oregon at Nebraska game this coming week. I've got a composite spreadsheet that we use to try and project out points.
Oh, yeah. What is the...
We'll talk more about this on our Wednesday preview show, but the composite is between ESPN's FPI. Our good friends over at Massey Peabody have sent us some of their numbers as well. We thank them for their insight. But right now, at time of recording, I've got that at about Nebraska minus four.
Okay.
Which kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah. They struggled until the end with Wyoming. Looked good against Fresno State. Tommy Armstrong against a vulnerable defense. Yeah, I think that's not unreasonable.
We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Elsewhere in the Pac-12, Washington continued to look very, very good, but it was Idaho. But listen, that's what really good teams should do. And again, number two on the march to 15. USC did what they needed to do. Max Brown was fine, if not a little bit slow reading the field. I don't see how this USC team beats more than one team they shouldn't, as they appear to be in the present. Any thoughts on USC or Washington?
Now, Washington did what it needed to do. They continue to look impressive. USC, I saw bits and pieces of the game. My only real level of analysis comes from those on Twitter who follow USC, and none of them seem particularly happy.
No, which is weird of a 45-7 result, but yeah, it was a bit of a sloppy showing, but whatever.
UCLA people, too, fall into that category.
I don't blame them either for what they did against
not feeling great, I guess, against the run with UNLV.
Yeah. It was 28-21 into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
UCLA separated at the end, and Josh Rosen throws some nice balls, didn't throw any picks. But yeah, UNLV able to move the ball on the ground against UCLA, and much in the way that there should be some worry with Oregon up front against the run at this point. Maybe a little bit with UCLA, although I would be much more encouraged by UCLA's talent level on defense. Cal lost to San Diego State. And you, sir, and I as well have said Patrick Mahomes in a losing effort, but don't count out another Cliff Kingsbury.
Do you want me to throw this one in there too?
Please.
Davis Webb doing work.
Yeah, in terms of pure numbers, it might be hard to argue against 522 yards, although he did have three picks. I think Patrick Mahomes only had a couple. So maybe the edge there is to Patrick Mahomes in terms of fun play and a losing effort. But and I assume this is what's going to lead PTI, the Davis Webb, Patrick Mahomes losing effort argument. San Diego State's really good. An unsung, really good team from last year. And Donnell Pumphrey ran for damn near 300 yards and three touchdowns against, I don't think we think the Cal defense is particularly good, but they're a power five defense. That's a thing. Donnell Pumphrey should continue to terrorize everybody that San Diego State plays. And that's a good football thing.
It's so funny in some of these games, whether it's Cal or Texas Tech.
And I believe
Washington
I had that
State. Fight. Yeah, I had Cal to cover. You liked San Diego
I like
State.
Donnell Pumphrey.
You like Donnell Pumphrey, sure. But yeah. What I was going to say is, it's so funny to watch some of these teams because it's like legitimately a Pro Bowl defense. And I'm not talking Pro Bowl caliber defense as in all-stars playing
effort.
Defense.
Yeah.
I'm saying effort level. If you watch some of the plays in that ASU-Texas Tech game, it's almost like Texas Tech isn't even trying. It's incredible.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
All right, what else happened in the Pac-12?
Colorado looked good against a bad team. Arizona almost lost to a bad team. And I think we hit everybody. We hit the Holy War. We hit USC Washington. You want to hop over to the Big 12, which is in the middle of a nightmare couple weeks, other than if you're wearing burnt orange?
Yeah, so Oklahoma, West Virginia, they get the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Texas and Shane Bechel, again, the second coming.
Mm-hmm.
22 of 27, 244 through the air and four touchdowns. A bunch more of those passes where he just kind of heaves it down the sidelines. He's getting pretty
Shane
good
Shane Bechel's.
Yeah, it's Texas 41, UTEP 7. Baylor struggled early. They were tied 6-6 at half with SMU, but they poured it on in the second half. They put it out of reach. 14 penalties against them, though. Also had three turnovers. They're going to need to kind of get that cleaned up before they start playing some real competition, but they win 40-30. Ohio beat Kansas.
Yeah.
37-21, something we've grown far too used to with the Kansas Jayhawks, but they lose that game despite winning in week one. And a good jumping off point to go on over to the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
El Asico.
El Asico.
Dan Rubenstein's lock.
Lock of the week.
Iowa 42, Iowa State 3. Iowa.
I believe
easily,
you took the points here.
I took the points here. I was just trying to be different, you know?
Believe.
I was just trying to be different.
Oh, Ty.
Iowa easily covers that 15-point spread.
Yes.
And wins by 39 here.
Yep. Everybody was efficient. Everybody was good for Iowa on both sides of the ball. Yeah, Oklahoma looked good against Funroe, I believe. But yeah, West Virginia beat the Penguins, Youngstown State, and Bo Pelini.
Struggled initially, but yeah.
Yep.
Struggled
tied
initially.
At halftime, but they, okay. Skylar Howard, looked good. Could be a sneaky competitor for losing effort this year, Skylar Howard.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go to the Big Ten.
Big Ten.
Ohio State, Michigan, both go nuts over their opponents. Michigan, in particular, had some cool stuff. Wilton Spate looked really good. 312, four touchdowns. I saw you posted on Twitter, and you're right. He throws a really nice deep ball.
Yeah.
What was also cool about this game is what Michigan did defensively. They blocked Central Florida's first three kicks. The first three kicks they blocked.
They were kickoffs.
Yeah. Incredible. I've never seen that before. Yeah. Michigan wins 51-14. Ohio State wins 48-3 over Tulsa. Now, elsewhere in the Big Ten, Wisconsin 54, Akron 10. Nice win for the Badgers, now 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
Monster game for Tommy Armstrong with 377 through the air as they run over Wyoming and the Cowboys 52-17.
By the way, though, I think that was a 24-17 game heading into the fourth quarter. So I am encouraged by the fact that Nebraska can pour it on and get their act together and sort of adjust to teams. Didn't separate until the end. And man, the Trace McSorley comment you made about, like, listen, if you just saw the stat line, you'd think Trace McSorley, all right, 330 yards.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel a little bit, I mean, Tommy Armstrong made some great reads. They made some terrific plays, spread the ball around pretty well. It was, you know, Westerkamp had a nice day, Alonzo Moore, Brandon Riley, but Tommy Armstrong still makes dumb throws.
He makes dumb throws, but he can at least throw down the field.
This is true.
That's something that Trace McSorley is still learning to do. He's very good at, like, those two-yard pop passes.
Mm-hmm.
But anything outside, like, there was a point during that Penn State game where I legitimately wondered, can he reach the chains if he tries to throw a pass? And then he threw like a 15-yard strike to Deshaun Hamilton to make me feel like a jerk. But I feel a lot better about Tommy Armstrong throwing down the field than I do a guy like Trace McSorley, but you're right. There's a lot of similarity there.
I am at least a little bit encouraged as an Oregon fan that Nebraska struggled on the ground against Wyoming, because that's where Oregon is particularly susceptible.
Indiana wins 30-20 over Ball State. Maryland, another impressive effort. They win 41-14 over FIU.
Ty?
Yes.
Ty, can you play the breaking news sound, please?
Breaking news! Boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop. This is just to point out that Maryland did not throw an interception in this game.
Wow.
And that's wonderful. That is terrific.
Good for
Maryland
them.
Looking like a real team.
They are so far through two games in the DJ Durkin era, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Looking all right.
Yeah, so far so good. And who do they have next week? They have UCF. They could win that game. Then they have Purdue. They could win that game.
Mm-hmm.
Or no, Maryland going to Penn State.
Mm-hmm. Don't count them out, man. I'm telling you, don't count them out.
Love DJ Durkin.
Cincinnati wins 38-20 over Purdue. Cincinnati with a big one, by the way, this coming week against Houston.
Is that a Thursday night game?
Thursday night game, yeah. Thursday night game. We're going to put that on the pick'em pool, so make sure that everyone...
Sign up early.
Yeah. We've got Rutgers running over Howard 52-14. A little
tied
close.
At halftime.
A little close there for a while, yeah. The Illinois State 9-7 win over Northwestern, which we alluded to before. And then I got to get into this. We'll talk about Notre Dame, if only because their next opponent is Michigan State. Now, Michigan State was on a bye. They travel this coming week for a big night game against Notre Dame to South Bend.
Yep.
Notre Dame wins over Nevada 39-10. Defensively, a much better showing for the Irish. But now they're going to be without Sean Crawford, who was their starting cornerback, had a world of talent, but was out all last year with a torn ACL. This now hurts Notre Dame's secondary depth in a way that I probably can't properly verbalize here on the show. The secondary was already a question mark. Now you lose Crawford. And it's one of those deals where it's like, there's a big movie playing and you want to go see it, but before you do, your friend just spoils the ending for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, you already know how it's going to end.
So is the ending in this game a breakdown in the back half of the defense?
No, I'm saying the ending in this season is essentially a breakdown in the back half of the defense. We already know this is how it's all going to end for Notre Dame. We just don't know the in-between parts and to whom they will lose these games. But somebody's going to find a way to pick on that defense. And I don't know who it's going to be, but it's going to happen probably a couple times this year. And that's how Notre Dame's going to lose its games. This is not a playoff contender anymore with the way that the back half of this defense is playing.
Really on the bright side, can I give you an optimist view of Notre Dame? They decided to start their starting quarterback and play him the entire game, pretty much.
I want to play this sound. I haven't played it all year.
Okay. Well, I believe in God, and the only thing that scares me is Kaiser Soze.
Yeah. DeShone Kaiser getting the start. He looked pretty good.
Yeah.
They only gave him about three quarters, and they put Malik Zaire in.
Right.
Which was a smart move. The stat line's not going to knock you over if you look at it, but Kaiser looked good. He had full command of this offense, and I'm excited to see what he can do as he starts to grow into some of these receivers now. It's not big Bill Fuller out there, but Equanimeous St. Brown looking pretty good.
Another nice day.
CJ Sanders, very good in space. I'm excited to see what some of these younger guns, Kevin Stefferson, what can he do? Yeah, they've got talent out there. It's just going to take a little while for everyone to start gelling.
Kevin Stefferson sounds like the name of a kid who pees his pants a little bit too late in class. Oh, God. Kevin!
Yeah.
Kevin Stefferson. Looking across other games, LSU.
Hmm.
We didn't fully mention that, but hey, LSU put in a Purdue transfer, and that was the difference. And Danny Etling.
Who would have thought that would have been the storyline through week two, that a Purdue transfer could be the one to save
not even
the fledgling offense of LSU?
Not even completing half of his passes, but did certainly had a nice touchdown throw down the left side to at least break the game a little bit open. As we run down other impressive performances, Wisconsin, great day on the ground. Bart Houston was efficient. Corey Clement went for over 100. They spread the ball around. And Akron's not great, but they're okay. And Wisconsin just throttled them. Talked about El Asico. We just mentioned Notre Dame. Ole Miss outpaced Wofford. Go Terriers, by the way.
Yeah.
We're pro Terrier. Texas A&M's defense looked excellent against an interesting story in Prairie View. as I look down here, Miami's sort of an uneven game, but we're good on the ground. But Brad Kaya was he was fine, but was sloppy with the ball. We'll see if that improves over the course of the season. East Carolina have won how many straight?
It's like eight
ACC games.
Eight.
They have won eight straight games. Philip Nelson, who I believe transferred from Minnesota, had a nice day for the Pirates, and East Carolina, driver's seat for the Big 12. Got it. I think they've already been counted out. But outside of that, we have 2-0 Army, which is worth mentioning.
Yep.
Boston College scored double-digit points against an FBS team.
Yeah,
that's worth mentioning. Temple with a nice bounce back against a non-FBS team in Stony Brook. I think this is the first time in decades that all three service academies are 2-0.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. Ty,
Wake and Duke. Wake and Duke was actually one of the more entertaining games of the day.
Offense.
Yeah. Wake wins 24-14. Alabama, 38-10 over Western Kentucky. Jalen Hurts looked really solid, I thought.
Yeah, offense sloppy at times.
Sloppy at times, but sure. Auburn putting some points on the board, which I'm sure Auburn fans like to see, 51-14 over Arkansas State.
Hmm?
Florida. Let's mention Florida. We don't want to go an entire show without talking about how well they played in this game. Luke Del Rio, 320, four touchdowns, had a nice long one to Antonio Callaway earlier in the game. The defense forced four Kentucky turnovers, held the Wildcats to like 150 total yards.
Yep.
They're playing at a pretty high level right now, so I think you're excited if you're a Florida fan.
I think Florida defensive backs at one point, I heard this morning, had more catches than Kentucky receivers, Kentucky pass catchers.
That would make a lot of sense.
Problematic. Yeah. Problematic because Kentucky might be particularly bad, and Florida should be pretty good. Georgia Tech, just Mercer, but 35-10. We've seen weird performances from Georgia Tech recently. They're now 2-0.
Our home dog of the week, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Not living up to the bill.
Early on
lived up to the bill, but UNC wins by 25, 48-23 on the road. By the way, if you're a fan of home dogs, if you're a fan of the home dog sound, I'm not going to wear it out and play it here. But if you like that sound, you might want to listen to our Wednesday show. A lot of home dogs this coming week in week three.
Mississippi State held on-ish against South Carolina, who looks like they're just going to be a struggle bus all year long on offense anyway.
Hold on, I'm jotting down another sound I need. Struggle bus. Okay.
So it's not my word, but it's a good term.
Whoever it is, thank them. Yeah. We're going to make a sound. We'll send it to them.
Feels like it's Holly Anderson's because most good terms are that have crossed. By the way, I think it was in the TCU game. It was like an eight-year-old, possibly like a shirtless eight-year-old.
It was a shirtless eight-year-old. The baby surrender shirtless cobra. Yeah.
Oh, the junior cobra. I think we hit everything big. Hawaii with a nice first win after traveling 10 trillion miles around the globe 44 times. They beat Tennessee Martin
talk about Dan Mullen shorts?
God, we should.
Did we talk about that? Okay.
We'll save that till next episode.
It's weak if we don't. So
yeah,
make sure we do. Okay. Well, look, week two in the books.
Yeah.
It really was.
Did you have a good Saturday?
I had a good Saturday. Yeah.
Did you watch all the games from home? Did you go out?
I went to a sports bar. I didn't really want to tell the story. I haven't even told the story to the solid wife.
It's a place of honesty.
I was at a sports bar on Saturday to watch this game. And I know you're a tennis fan.
Love a good tennis match.
All right. You sent me a picture of your setup and you actually had the US Open on one of the TVs. Well, I like tennis. I'm fine with tennis as a sport. But I don't really care to watch it. Just not my thing.
Listen, I like that you exist. I'm not going to acknowledge you with my attention, but I like that you exist.
We exist in the same sphere, and I'm fine with that. But I'm not going to interact with you. That's my stance on tennis. I'm terrible at tennis. I don't particularly care to watch it, but I know a lot of people are into the US Open right now. So that's the thing. Mm-hmm. In the sports bar, there were about four different channels on. One had the Wisconsin-Akron game. Another had Wake and Duke. And then the other two had the US Open finals on. Mm-hmm. This was during the Notre Dame game. Me and the solid wife, we walked into the sports bar thinking, we can watch the game somewhere. It wasn't on.
Right.
So I kindly asked our server if she would mind switching one of the televisions to the Notre Dame-Nevada game on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
She said, sure, no problem. So I saw the servers kind of communicating up near the, the switches up there near the front of the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And they proceed to switch both TVs that had the US Open final over to Notre Dame and Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with this. Works fine for me. The solid wife couldn't care less. All is honky-dory, except for the one angry tennis mom and what appeared to be her 12-year-old son, who picked up and left in a huff
Ooh.
Mumbled under their breath to maybe me and definitely our server
about, tell everybody.
Yeah. How could you change the channel? I don't know what set it was in. I didn't care.
Right.
How could you change the channel here? And she was glaring at me with this evil glare from across the room. And then they walked out. And this is the point at which I texted you and said, I think we're about to have a standoff here at the sports bar because I asked to get the channel changed and they complied.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to throw down, but I was ready to if I needed to.
Good. I'm glad your aggression is already in mid-season form.
It's there.
I like it. I ate like 2 pounds of dip yesterday and I have paid the price. Brian Nanny, our pal here at SB Nation, makes, you've had this dip, I believe.
The bean dip?
Black bean chorizo dip? And black-eyed pea.
It's great.
And collard greens and cheese and cream. It's heavy and it's wonderful and it's the best dip that exists. And tweet Ryan if you want the recipe.
Yeah.
But it was just a tray. Our pal Bill Barnwell came over of Pop Punk Emo fame, yeah, obviously.
Sure.
Pop Punk Emo show. And there was just a giant brownie pan worth, you know, a 13 by 9 or whatever tray, giant bag of tortilla chips. And I think it arrived a little after noon. And from about noon to 9 p.m., it was just a distance eat for me. It was just long range eating. It was like, and I have paid a price this morning, Ty.
Now, do you mix that with any alcohol?
I didn't have any alcohol. I just had water and some coffee throughout the day. And then at night, I just had some roasted vegetables for dinner because I'd eaten so poorly.
Does anybody else in your viewing party mix it with alcohol?
I think, let's see.
Because here's what I'm discovering.
I don't know.
Here's what I'm discovering. Before we did this show, before people expected a certain amount of quality from this show.
I'm so sorry if you did.
This was like last year. But
yeah,
before things started to get real with the solid verbal, I would engage in a few adult libations.
Sure, why not?
College football Saturday, and I still do to some extent, depending on how much Notre Dame's losing by. Mm-hmm. But I find that for an all-day affair, if you start before like 4 o'clock, you have virtually no shot of making it through like the 12:30 hour. And I mean, it's just like a knockout punch. So I can't do it anymore.
I got to figure out if I'm going to start drinking coffee at like 4 p.m. I really made that mistake last night, but I'm, in retrospect, glad I didn't. I was up till, I made it into the beginning of the fourth quarter of the Oregon game, but there was no reason to stay up knowing I had to be up early for work this morning. So that's rough. Oh, yeah.
We're getting old.
Not young anymore, Ty. I was just about to say that. I can't eat 2.5 pounds of chorizo.
We're not that young.
Man.
All right. Well,
where does the time
go? Give us a call at 408-VERBAL-1 or send
us
a tweet.
We're still younger than Taysom Hill. We should point that out.
Yeah.
We're still younger than Taysom Hill.
Let us know how your Saturday went. Let us know what you've got planned for this coming Saturday. I know what I've got planned, and it's watching a lot of football. Because
it's going to be a great one.
From stem to stern, right? We got games starting off already on Thursday, then a big one right off the bat. High noon on Saturday that runs the full way through right on into Sunday morning. So get your popcorn ready, folks. Get your verbal ready. We will be out with a new show on Wednesday, previewing all of that and much, much more. In the meantime, if you've got anything to say, give us a holler at solidverbal@gmail.com or on Twitter, or on Facebook, on Instagram, or on Snapchat. We'll be snapping some stuff out over the next couple days, Dan.
Yeah.
I will talk to you on Wednesday, okay?
I think that's totally cool by me.
For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, thanks again for tuning in to The Solid Verbal. If you like what we do, tell your friends to subscribe at itunes.com/solidverbal. We'll catch you all in a few days. Stay solid.
Peace.